Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. Interesting. Mm. That's why you need Robert Half. Yep. I don't think that's a person. That's the company.
Okay, I was confused.
Yeah, their specialized recruiting professionals engage with their proprietary AI. Welcome to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing, and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. See, at Robert Half, they know talent. I wish I had had Robert Half back in the day when I was hiring.
Okay.
So, no offense, Sona.
Oh, I feel like you did mean to offend me.
Yes, you wouldn't be here if I had had Robert Half. Okay. Visit RobertHalf.com today.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Sizing you up.
It's the buildup.
Hmm? She can't handle the buildup.
Oh. Will that help? Just nothing?
Whenever you're ready.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Al Franken, and I feel privileged about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Fall is here. Back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Sitting here with my companions, my friends, they would do anything for me. Can't say that I would reciprocate, but okay. Sonam Obsession.
Hi.
Matt Gourley. Good
Hi.
To see you, sir.
Hi.
I have to tell you, I did a lot of traveling recently. I've been all over the world on a special project and then came back and had to do some work on the East Coast on the way back and then flew here and I came down with quite a cold.
Sounds like it.
And here's the thing that I like. When I get a cold, I prefer my voice.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think this is a better voice. Eduardo, why don't you weigh in?
Yeah, I love it. I think you should always have a cold.
Okay. So you're saying, and Eduardo, be honest, you're saying my natural speaking voice.
It's just more soothing. It's easier to like mix.
Yeah.
Because you know, when you normally speak, kind of gets up here a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is, you know, nice and cool.
No, this is... This is nice, and I have this register right here, and it just feels good. And so I'm wondering, how can I keep this going all the time? Because I prefer this. Wow. And so I don't know what to do. One would be to constantly reinfect myself.
Yeah, I think that's your best
to hire sickly children to cough into my open mouth.
Yeah, but you also your immune system will get better, and eventually you'll never get sick again, and then you'll never have this voice again.
I think if you scream, wake up and scream every morning.
I don't think that's going to do it.
You know,
smoke.
You think I should start smoking? Yeah. Maybe that would do it.
What if we just have you record like a bunch of random sayings while you're feeling this way?
Yeah. While I'm feeling this way, this is Conan recovering from a cold, and maybe we should just record some stuff now that we can use in the future.
Let's try some. How about, yo, Adrian, give me that.
Yo, Adrian.
Pretty good.
That's cool.
How about this? What we want are little phrases that will fit nicely into almost any interview. Things like, oh, yeah, I hear you.
I've never heard you say that.
But
you've never said that. Now you're taking on a persona you want to be, but that's not who you are.
No, but you could still slip that in if we have someone who's talking on the show. And on the podcast, you could just slide that in.
But how's this going to work if normally you have your regular voice and then it just goes into this?
Well, people hear it and they'll just think, oh, that's the real Conan.
You think people will think this is the real you and then you make your voice that other way?
I do hope you come back soon. That's a good one to just slide in there every now and then.
And you want me to slide that somewhere in the middle of the interview?
Yeah, just in the middle of an interview with Henry Kissinger. I suddenly...
sound like Henry Kissinger.
I do sound like Henry Kissinger. Yes. Yeah, I just think it's... we should try and get as many of these as possible.
Do you feel different?
Hold on a second.
I'll say, what about like Cockaroo? Mm.
Yes, in this voice.
How about this? Katakai. As God made her. That's pretty good. Wow. How about this one? A Cockaroo. Now, this is when you could, hey, this has been a great episode. I've enjoyed it. If you've enjoyed it half as much, well, you probably had an orgasm.
Oh!
What the fuck?
That right? took a
that was creepy.
Hard left turn.
Hard left turn?
Yeah.
Tell you something else that took a hard left turn.
What took a hard
what
left turn?
What took a hard left turn?
I didn't say that.
You did say that.
Guys, let's
your
get it.
Your personality is changing with this voice. Yeah. I think that you're changing as a human being.
I like
Hey, Sona.
Yeah.
You're looking fine today.
Ew.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know. That felt weird. I don't like that.
Also, your posture's like changed.
I know.
Too.
You're all like, I don't like this guy.
You're like Don
this
Imus.
This guy sucks.
You're missing a cigarette.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. No, this guy sucks.
He'd smoke Virginia Slims.
I'm wearing athleisure wear.
Come on. No, that guy would not say athleisure wear. That guy's cool.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the point is, maybe this doesn't work, but I do think we should try and record as much as possible. I should probably try and get a book on tape deal while I have this voice. You know what I mean?
But then what if you get better as you're doing it?
No. Trust me. I know how to sustain this cold for a little while longer. If I could just get a good book, you know, maybe one of those sort of a real sensual novel. I think that would be fantastic.
Okay. Mm. No one's buying it because I can't even imagine you saying like a sex book without like feeling very uncomfortable by it.
When I have this cold, I'm not uncomfortable about anything. Well, this cold has literally changed my personality.
Give us a little a sample of the sex book.
I didn't think you'd be here, she said. I thought I'd never see you again. I made it clear. I'm here because I saw in your eyes you want me to be here.
That's so arousing, this dialogue.
Hold it, I'm not done.
I am.
I'm not done. Wait, you saw it in my eyes? Yes, I looked into your eyes and I saw that you wished me to come by. And I could tell the way your eyes were. That you wanted me to come by.
No, this textbook sucks. There's not even, no one's undressing yet. When is someone going to undress?
That's 40 pages from here.
Oh my God.
What is it? Hold it. What is it about my eyes that makes you think that? She asked, widening her eyes. Well, I have to say, it's just a quality the eyes have.
Oh God, no, come on.
And when the light hits them a certain way, plus, some people have a lot of veins in their eyes.
Oh, pass.
But you don't. You're relatively vein clear. So
boo.
That's what made me think. Cut to 40 pages later.
Hey!
Okay, if that's what you wish.
Aw.
Zip. Thwabba dabba shabba dabba. But it's not what you think it was. He unzipped his pants and just pudding fell out.
Oh.
Yeah, he was keeping pudding in his pants.
What a waste of a good voice.
I know. I can't even do an erotic thing for 8 seconds.
No. Can you laugh in this register?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. That's right. Good one, guest. Let's use that. How about this? Good one, guest. Hey, guest.
What would an interview subject do if during the interview you said, hello, guest, or good hey, one, guest?
Well, we want to make sure we can use this as much as possible.
Yeah. Damn it.
Yeah. So understand. How about this? I'll do, oh, yeah, guest.
Yeah.
Loving it. Keep it going. Hey, that was a great anecdote, guest. Can't wait to hear more after this brief commercial. For a kind of software I don't understand. And we're back. Conan O'Brien here with guest, and we are killing it.
I think I'm worried about you.
Why?
I don't know. I just feel like maybe this time you've gone too far.
Okay. Maybe I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I apologize. It's the cold. I don't know. I like it. I don't know. Maybe we can do something with
this. It is cool. No, I think it's a really cool. It sounds really. I do prefer this to your regular voice.
Try some classic action hero lines and see if it matches. Like, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
That's pretty good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Give me a couple. I don't remember.
I dare you to knock this battery off my shoulder.
You were referencing a commercial nobody remembers.
What is that?
It's a battery ad from 1977.
Okay, this has gone too far.
Yeah.
That you owe everybody an apology, man.
Yeah. Oh, Robert Conrad.
Oh, do I?
Are you? Oh, my God. What are you doing?
It's me, Puddin' Pants.
This is the worst.
This is so bad.
Soda, do you have like a sexy voice yourself?
It has to be sex. It has to be.
Oh, I've been with Sona. I've been with Sona in her single days when she would find someone attractive and she would do it all with her face.
It would be all, but then it'd be a lot of giggling.
No, but you would do a lot of pointing. You would point your face and move it in different angles and your eyes would get very wide.
I know,
It was really fun to watch.
Let's have a quick conversation of the three of us in sexy voice.
Okay. All right, here we go.
Okay.
All
right. Sexy voice.
Hey, everybody, how's it going?
Hey, man, it's going pretty good.
Hi.
Wait, I'm sorry about your throat cancer.
Hey, man, it's all right. I'm sorry about your tongue-octomy.
Well, they reattached the tongue using a rubber one, so I'm fine now.
Yeah.
Stop so go being sexy so fast.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to have sex or something?
No, I do not.
No, me either.
That's not how sexy people ask me.
No,
if they want to have sex.
Oh, really? How do they will you ask us how to have sex with us?
What the fuck?
Jesus. That's now I'm going back to my regular voice. Jesus. Oh, my. Oh, my stars and garters.
Fresh.
Jesus Christ. The hell, Sona? Oh. Mother of two. What the hell is wrong with you?
How do you think she became?
We were all doing sexy. That you guys were really bad at it. You guys were so bad at
what?
It.
What?
You guys were.
I don't think so.
Not the sound quality, but the shit you guys were saying was
well,
so
what I'd
stupid.
Like to know is if there's a way, Eduardo, the real takeaway from this is that people do prefer this voice.
Yeah.
And so we've got to figure out a way for my lungs to fail more often.
Yeah.
So work on that. Maybe there's something in the technology we could do.
Yeah, I think I can copy and paste for later.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
All right. That's sad that that made sense to me. All right. Well, listen, guys, we got to get into it.
Give this the sexiest reading you possibly can.
Here we go.
Oh, God.
My guest today is a comedian, writer, and former U.S. senator.
Oh, hold me back.
Oh, God.
Hold me back. Who is this?
That really narrows it down.
Oh, God.
He was one of the original writers for Saturday Night Live and the author of 4 #1 New York Times bestsellers.
Hi, Poppy.
He currently hosts his own podcast, the Al Franken Podcast. I'm thrilled he's here today. Al Franken, welcome. We go back a long way.
We do.
I met you in February. No, you didn't let me finish. 1988. February of 1988, I showed up at Saturday Night Live, and you were, I was so nervous, and you have a very distinctive, hearty laugh. That's... And I remember you early on laughing at something I said, and it made me feel a lot better. And I felt like, okay, that's
laughter
a start.
Is the oxygen of comedy.
Yes. Okay. It's. I guess that's true.
So there's evidently Matt thinks there's some oxygen in the room.
Apparently, but very little. I don't think a mice. I don't think mice could live in this environment if that's the level we're going to go for.
Carvey said that to me. That laughter is the oxygen of comedy.
Dana Carvey, who was in our podcast studio just a few hours ago, doing something for us, and
he is. The oxygen of comedy.
He is.
That didn't work, did it?
You got to change it so not everything's oxygen, you know? So, yes, laughter's the oxygen of comedy, and then Dana Carvey maybe is the is the sun around which other laughs revolve.
The hydrogen of comedy.
Oh.
Okay, this is a terrible podcast already. I'm going to get it back on track.
Okay.
And just say that
I got to know you all those years ago, and we've remained very good friends.
Yeah.
And
But the thing is, the privileged part is that you're a really good guy. I know.
Yeah.
They don't like it when that comes up on the show, that I might.
Okay, let's take it back. No, I mean, it's the thing. I mean, you play your character mm-hmm. on this show.
That's not a character.
But no, it's no, so close to your character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's a spin on it, which is you embrace all your faults, which are very real.
Yeah.
And too numerous to mention. Yeah.
No, well, thank God.
Yeah.
So you have something for you guys to talk about. Mm-hmm. But the weird part is that you're a very... what am I saying? I'm saying stuff that's so obvious that you're very aware of the stuff. And, of course, you wouldn't be able to be funny about your faults unless you were aware of them.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
There we go.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But then...
Okay,
but,
that was not the oxygen.
No, no, no. No. But also, just really stick the landing on, but also a great guy.
Huh.
That, you know... That
oh,
was,
that's right.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yeah. Yes. Okay, good. Okay. Good, good, good. Okay, I think we got what we need for this interview.
I do think your instinct, not your instinct, but you can be so good at being bad if you wanted to. And you, I don't think anyone's better at just being just, you know, like just...
What are you talking
like
about?
Like pressing buttons like you do.
Oh, I learned. Oh, yeah. I came from a kiln in Brookline, Massachusetts. They packed a bunch of crazy Irish people together in a very small space.
Yes.
And that's where you get this Frankenstein. So blame it on them.
It's like you're an addict to evil, but you're sober. But you could like fall off the wagon at any time.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
He's this close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This close to
really just being the worst Hitler. Guy. I'm more of a Stalin guy, you know? I like agricultural plans that don't work. Devastate a whole generation. Yeah. Anyway, let's make the focus you, Al, which is you are such a funny guy, and you have made this turn.
I'm on tour.
That's what I was. But that's what I was going to get to is you've made this tour to stand up. Now, you've been in the business a long time. You're a sketch writer. Famously, you performed for many years on the show. But your experience going in front of live audiences used to be with your partner, Tom Davis.
Yep. What happened was after I left the Senate, I started doing speeches. And I realized that my speeches were like 80% funny. Mm-hmm. And then 20% was, we got to win. We got to beat Trump. And if we do Bernie, I love Bernie. I serve with Bernie. Bernie's great. I understand single payer. I backed single payer.
Yeah.
And Bernie was saying, there'll be no private insurance. And people would like their private insurance, and also their employer pay for it, basically.
Right.
And what you'll get is something you've never seen. And you don't know what it is. But I guarantee, you know, and then, you know, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
The British system is great, but every other country has universal health care, and other than they all have health, some private health insurance. So I was that, and then 80% was fun, was like, I went, oh, well, this is stand-up.
Yeah.
And I admire stand-up so
much. Sure, yeah.
That's the thing. I've been watching a lot of stand-ups, but none of them do public policy at all.
Well, no, Sinbad did for a while. Sinbad would crush with public policy. You know, we've known each other for a long time, and I've seen you through, I think, a dispassionate lens where I can say there was this period in the Senate where you needed to be serious.
Yeah, they said don't be funny.
They said don't be funny, and so
don't be funny. Don't be funny on the floor.
Right.
Don't be funny in hearings. Don't be funny. Don't be funny.
No jokes. No sarcasm, because the other side, whoever that is, can take that out of context. Just read it.
That was true. Of course, that was true. But it was also more. You won by 312 votes.
Right.
And people in Minnesota want to know that you're serious about this.
Yeah.
And I went, yeah, no shit. Right. And I didn't really internalize it at first. So I tell the story, and well, first day I'm there, I get sworn in, go back to my office. First day in my office, I've never been, you know, take the subway back to the office, go to the heart building, get in my office. There's a sheet on my paper, on my desk, and I learned that one of your duties as a senator is to write congratulatory notes to constituents. Mm-hmm. And this first note is to Ruth Anderson, who's turning 110. She's from Marshall, Minnesota. She's turning 110. So I've been told, don't be funny. So I get out my official stationery, use it for the first time. I write, "Dear Ruth, you have a bright future."
And then someone put that in the shredder. Yeah.
Close. My new assistant, who I had never, hadn't met, comes in. Well, I'd met her, but I hadn't worked with her. She takes it and brings it to my new chief of staff, who I selected. And he says, "What is this?" And I said, it's a joke.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You think Ruth Anderson will find it funny? I said, "I don't know. She's 110.
And well, see, but
and he said, I'm sorry. He said, "Do you think her family will find it funny?" Yeah, and I went, "Oh, yeah." And I started thinking about her 90-year-old son reading it.
But see, this is what I'm trying to get to is for those of us who knew you and you worked so hard at being a senator and taking it very seriously and really doing the work and you
well, of course,
but
of course,
it was interesting.
Of course,
for me to see you,
I'm gonna keep saying that.
Of course, it was interesting to see you at that time because I knew that you had to restrain this whole other side of you, which was really funny because you really can't be doing that if you're in the Senate. And then now I see that you're just back to hitting on all cylinders comedically.
I'd say on 3 out of 4. No, okay, I'm trying to hit on all cylinders. No, it's been great.
It's like a 12-cylinder engine, and you're hitting on 3 cylinders. We're talking about a classic.
I like to say 8, mm-hmm. 3 out of 4. But no, I think I'm hitting. I'm doing high. So
2 cylinders. Two cylinders it's now. You're now down to 2 out of 12.
Oh boy.
The car is smoking. It's not even moving. So what would you do with $100 billion? Seriously.
Oh, I would buy a country.
Okay. I would buy just a ton of yachts and private jets, and I would duct tape them all together. And then just have it go in a circle in the Pacific Ocean.
What?
Yeah. I don't know, just to be a total jerk. Anyway, there is a correct answer.
Oh.
And it's build incredible cities in fantastical locations while competing with your friends to be the biggest tycoon in the world. What do you think of that answer?
That's better than mine.
Yep, and mine, which you can do with Monopoly Go, the hit mobile game that's so much fun, it's been downloaded over 150 million times. It's the fun of classic Monopoly on the go, anytime, anywhere. Endless new surprises like tons of boards and crazy minigames. You can team up with your chums on community chess and tournaments to get big money. Or you can go after their fortune-changing rent on your properties or even pulling a bank heist on them. So much fun. It's incredible. So start building up your billions today. Go download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store and Google Play. You know, it's only a matter of time until your check engine light comes on, which could equal an expensive repair bill, and a new engine can cost up to $6,000.
Don't I know it?
But this is why you need this product I'm about to mention right now.
Okay.
CarShield. CarShield offers plans with low monthly rates that you can pay for your expensive repairs on your out-of-warranty car, truck, or SUV. It's so nice to have that protection of CarShield.
I know.
I believe. That's my belief. Some people have other beliefs, maybe religious beliefs. I think CarShield. CarShield plans provide protection on up to 5,000 major parts and systems, including items like transmission, engine, even your entertainment system. Mm. Just call CarShield and choose the mechanic to do the work. CarShield administrators will handle the rest and save you money. Look, I saw your car today. You've got a beautiful car, but you've got a haul your family around in this car. This is a vital piece of machinery for you. You need Car Shield.
I do. And you know, I don't take care of my cars very well. So Car Shield, it would definitely come in.
You know, and also with their A rating from the BBB, don't ask me, Car Shield is the name you can trust to save you money on covered auto repairs. Now's the time to make the smart choice and protect yourself from the sky-high auto repair bills. Visit carshield.com/Conan. Save 20% today. Again, that's carshield.com/Conan to save 20%. Visit carshield.com/Conan to lock in your price today.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
It was interesting. Like, the second week I'm there, there's a Supreme Court hearing. I'm on the Judiciary Committee, and Sotomayor and Amy Klobuchar, who's my senior senator, who's was a prosecutor, asked her, like, why did you become a prosecutor? And she said, well, because I watched Perry Mason and I watched Perry Mason too. And so when it got to me, I just said, why, if you watch Perry Mason, a show in which the prosecutor lost every case.
Yes.
Why did you become a prosecutor? Yeah. And she goes, actually, Berger won one case. Yeah. That was a prosecutor. And so I said, okay, well, look, I got 30 minutes of questioning, so let's get to that. And then at the end, I had I had about a minute left and I couldn't develop a new line of questioning. So I said, okay, as long as we're at it, what case did Perry Mason lose?
Yeah.
And she said, I don't know. And I said, just because I'm trained like you, I just said, didn't the White House prepare you? Which, of course.
They prepare you on TV trivia?
Well, she offered it as a piece of information and then couldn't follow up. So that was very damaging. But what the point about that is, I just got killed for that.
Really?
Does Al Franken have to be funny?
Yeah.
And it was, as you know, it was just, I didn't go, okay, I will ask her why she became a prosecutor. Because Amy hadn't asked that.
Yeah.
And then she will say Perry Mason. And then I'll say, well, how did you become?
At what point, because I know that you know your history well, at what point were we not allowed to be funny anymore in our political discourse? I mean, real politicians. I'm not talking about wags on the sidelines, but there have been some
There's a kind of funny you're supposed to be.
Right.
Or can be.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's funny. Like, everyone hates me because I say Lindsey Graham was the funniest. Sona just hates me right now. I saw that.
I don't
eyes.
Hate you. I'm just confused.
Well, it is confusing.
He has a quick sense of humor. He has a sharp sense of humor.
He does, and his sense of humor is, I'm very cynical. So I'll give you an example. I'm going to, we're taking a break for winter vacation, for Christmas vacation. And he says, Al, you going anywhere? Take your family for sun. And I said, I'm going to Vieques, which is Puerto Rico. And he goes, like, do two fundraisers. One for the people who are for statehood, one for the people who are against. They never talk to each other.
Oh my God.
And that, every one of his jokes is, I'm the most cynical guy in the world.
Yeah. And he's proving that, actually.
He has
day
proven
in and day out.
Last time I talked to him, I said, why are you for Trump? And I know the answer to that, which is he wants to be relevant. So that's what he did.
Well, I called you once because I just didn't understand during some of the intense. And this is really saying something. I just qualified during the intense Trump craziness. I don't even know what that but something happened. And of course, everyone was falling in line behind him. And I happen to know that you know some of these people like Lindsey Graham, and you just don't understand. I mean, that I didn't understand, but I knew that you knew him. So I called you up and I said, now, couldn't he say, look, we've gone too far? And so, you know, and you went, no, the phone. That's not what he's going to do. Yeah. And you were right.
Yeah. I mean, he's from South Carolina. So, you know, if you're going to get reelected in South Carolina. What are you going to do? And also, every other Republican who did that, and yep. Flake or Corker or anyone like that, was gone.
Yeah. Cheney.
Well, she voted along Trump lines a very, very, 90-some percent of the time. So politically, they're aligned, but she, after January 6th.
After the attempted insurrection.
I have a feeling that
maybe we should look into this.
Yeah, after that, it was amazing to me that only 10 Republicans voted for impeachment. Mm-hmm. And I thought that any of them were going like, well, of course, how can you not vote for this? And now, the Republican National Committee not so long ago said that January 6th was, quote, legitimate political discourse. Mm-hmm. Now, by the way, just so that you know that Conan and his show don't have a political bias, none of them had any reaction.
Oh, I totally. I agree.
We all do.
Yeah.
Wait, what? No, I'm...
Sona, we'll handle this.
Oh, okay. Sona, all right. I'm just a woman. I'm just going to sit over here quiet.
Please. The men are talking, Sona. And it was just discourse.
Legitimate.
The guy with the buffalo head.
the beating over the head. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I remember when they took that vote, I was going like, well, how can you be damaged politically by voting for impeachment? Yeah, that was pretty obvious. And 10 of them did. And I think probably all 10 went like, well, this is the right thing to do. And it's obvious, isn't it? Everybody, right.
And now they're in the private sector.
Yeah.
Do you time travel a lot in your head when you're watching everything that's unfolding and think, okay, if I was back there right now, what would I be doing? How would I be fighting this fight?
Yeah. It's painful. Mm-hmm. It's painful. I regret resigning and all that, and it's very painful to watch. And but especially when we were seeing it, I was relieved at the election that it wasn't the red wave everyone thought. Franny, my wife, said it's as if Americans said, stop it.
Yeah.
This election denial and stuff. But you saw what happened in the House, and it's kind of a squeezy time.
Yeah. I know you have your great granddad. I just have read that. I don't know that personally.
My great granddad.
No, your great granddad.
Oh,
you're
a terrific great granddad. That's officially what we put out.
Yeah. you handed me a type. Your handler gave me a sheet of paper that said mention
he's publicist.
A terrific. I should have said terrific grandfather, and I'm just doing as I was told.
Yeah, I thought you were gonna. I thought like, did my great grandfather die in the Holocaust? Because I'm like, I don't think we put that out.
Yeah, but
I know I'm a grandfather,
you're
I'm
grandfather,
okay.
And I. But no, but what I'm saying is, I think now about things so differently that I have kids that are 19 and 17, and you do think about things very differently when you have kids going out into the world about where we are and the level of discourse. And I am a 53% optimist, maybe a 52% optimist. And that gets me in trouble at home because I tend to think we're going to muddle our way through because we've muddled our way through before. Maybe. 53% sure about that. 52% sure about that.
It's changing.
I know. It's oscillating as I discuss it. But I don't know. Are you?
No.
You're not optimistic.
I'm 47, but I used to be 52.
Right.
So I'm watching you go down. You used to be 54.
Yeah, for a while I was 66, but I was single.
Well,
I was a single guy, and
going like
just hitting the clubs, and so
I remember that
a rave every night, and that just affects you,
Yeah.
A rave?
What you? Come on,
you were a raver.
You raved?
Oh,
like,
I raved.
You
like
had
you
pacifiers in, and you took.
I had a pacifier
ecstasy.
And ecstasy, and I had glow sticks.
A Mad Hatter
and I was
hat
whipping them around. Sure. You've seen photos of me from the late 80s, early 90s. I was losing it.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Baggy pants, mesh top.
I wore two eye patches. and I couldn't see where I was going. I was constantly being hit by cabs.
And I told you, wear them over the same fucking eye, yeah. Asshole.
Asshole. And then I did. And remember, I was very grateful to you.
Yeah.
What's about the SNL days? Because people love to hear about those times. We're gonna time travel now back to the year 1951 when you and I worked on a radio show called Saturday Night Live.
So Franken and Davis, we would do this thing, a show within the show called the Franken and Davis Show, mm-hmm. and we had my parents on twice, and once they got cut.
Your parents got cut
between Dress and Air.
That's rough.
Okay, and so the first time they're on, they just came on, and I, the character I played was me as an asshole, right? And so,
wait, that was a character.
That was a character. It's mm-hmm. just like you self-deprecate and paint right. yourself kind of as an asshole all the right. time.
Yeah,
and,
but we all know I'm complete opposite.
Exactly,
complete 180-degree opposite.
So that was the whole premise here, kind of. So anyway, so I have my parents on. I sing a song to them. Hey, Mom and Dad, this song is for you. I sang it a different key better. Anyway, so, and I sing, and then my mom says, this reminds me of when they called from school and said you had shit your pants or something like that. And I went, Mom, and I get mad at her. Right. And my dad says, stop yelling at your mother. And she said, crap your pants. This is
right, late. Right.
And then I get mad at him. I'm an asshole. And I kick my dad in the ass. Okay. So that one was on. Everyone loved it. Next time I have him on, Tom and I would do very dark stuff. And in this one, I think I have them. They're in dress. They're wearing Stars of David mm-hmm. and overcoats circa 1935, mm-hmm. Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. And Tom and I are in Gestapo outfits.
Right.
Look at the smile on your face.
You just love well, it. You love this it. Was our. This was something you kind of could do back then, right? You
yes.
could do very dark. The show, hallmark of the show, sometimes very dark.
Especially ending. After a certain hour, things could get very
yeah,
dark.
Yeah, and Tom and I were always on after that hour. Right. And so the whole point was at a certain point, my dad goes, Alan, I can't do this. We rehearsed it and, you know, we've done it all week. Why did you say now? We're on the show. We're live. Mm-hmm. I just can't. My friends, I can't go back to Temple to right. this sketch with you and the Gestapo, you know? And then I get really mad at him and yell at him. And this kind of ends that way.
Yeah.
Bernie Brillstein.
Famous, what would you call him?
Manager.
He was a manager, but he was even beyond that. He's a man that looked like Santa Claus and was a show business legend and had a big personality.
Yeah.
He was and represented everybody.
Including Lorne, yep. and just said to him, he's watching a dress and going, you can't do this. So, and I guess he was right. And so I think we could have done it. But anyway, so my parents get cut. Lorne comes up to me after the show and said, Al, don't put me in the position of cutting your parents ever again.
Were they upset that they were cut? They must have been.
A little bit. But, I mean, they understood. I couldn't go like, Lorne, that's amazing that you cut us on the Gestapo Star of David. My parents as Jews.
That's just the tip of the iceberg with you. You were constantly pitching ideas that you loved to go right up to the edge. And then,
sometimes over it.
Yes. Miles and miles beyond.
Yeah.
But were you always like that?
Well, I think I just came of age during a period where very dark humor was about the opposite of it. In other words, that you were exploring really dark things in order to laugh at how awful they were. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went over a line at times. And were you on the show at Comedy
yeah.
Killers?
Yeah.
Okay, so this was Downey and I had this idea for
Jim Downey, yeah, head writer, yeah.
It was a game show like Jeopardy, but it was called Comedy Killers. So the categories were the Holocaust, the Kennedys, cancer.
Yeah.
And so this is a joke I tell in my act because everything I'd ever done when I ran for the Senate in comedy was used against me.
Yeah.
I told a joke from that sketch that Rosie Schuster wrote, and it was, this would have been a bad gift for Anne Frank. What is a drum set?
Oh.
Oh, God. Jesus. Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So.
That's brought up now, of course, you're running then for Senate. And
Al Franken told jokes about the Holocaust.
Yeah.
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 So. I'd written a magazine article in the late 90s saying that parents should probably monitor what their kids get online. And but I wrote it satirically. So I said, my son Joe did a great fourth grade report last week on bestiality, and he downloaded a lot of great visual aids. And the kids in the class just loved them. And it was Al Franken. Don't jokes about bestiality. So we had to, Chuck Schumer was like monitoring my race. I was running for the nomination at the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's going, this is too much baggage. My pollster, we had to do focus groups to see if this really was a problem and if we could, you know, overcome it. She had the focus group in, and the first question she asked, if you knew that Al Franken told jokes about bestiality, would you be more likely to vote for him? It turned out less likely. But we discovered that, you know, if you explain things, that Minnesotans got irony, and they got, you know, what satire was, and so it wasn't a real problem. And then I went out to show this great report saying it wasn't a problem to Harry Reid. Mm-hmm. And then he asked me, what joke did you tell about the Holocaust?
And
I said, well, it, okay, the joke was, I think a bad Hanukkah gift for Anne Frank would have been a drum set. And then Harry started shaking. And I start thinking, okay, this is either very good or very bad.
Right.
And he just thought it was the funniest joke he'd ever. So I was okay.
Right.
After that. Oh, but the best joke in Comedy Killers, the sketch you remember, was Final Comedy Killer, like Final Jeopardy. Mm-hmm. Last, it was, you know, the ding, 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 the long, was the biggest comedy killer of all time. Downey wrote this joke. Here it was. What was the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand?
How did this sketch play in front of the audience?
Great.
Did it?
Yeah. It was, what year was it? I don't know. It was in the 80s, I think.
Yeah, probably 88.
I think World War One was closer at that time.
Yeah, people have forgotten.
It was Archduke like, Ferdinand. You know, 34 years closer or something. 35 right. years closer. So everyone was a big, you know, oh, that was terrible, that war. And, of course, started by the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand.
Yeah, by Gabriel.
The trench warfare.
Gabriel Princip, I think, shot him.
Yes.
Interesting. Archduke Ferdinand was on his way back. He was leaving Sarajevo.
Are you doing a comedy killer?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was leaving Sarajevo. His driver took a wrong turn.
Really?
And his car kind of stopped right in front of a cafe. Princip had had his chance to shoot, you know, the Archduke and hadn't done it. But the suddenly he's sitting in a cafe consoling himself by having a cup of coffee when this car pulls up in front of that cafe. And who's in it but the Archduke and his wife? And he just puts his cup of coffee down and steps out and kills them both. What an insane coinkydink. Anywho, we were doing Comedy Killers and I wanted to keep going with the Archduke Ferdinand.
Well, that shows something.
Nothing.
What?
What? I'm sorry.
Listen.
Why did he suddenly have the balls to do it if he couldn't do it the first time?
I think he wasn't able. I think there was.
He didn't have a shot.
Yeah, I think he didn't have a shot.
Oh, he just couldn't do it. Not that he like chickened out.
No, I think his blood sugar was low. But then he had a donut and a cup of coffee. And then this guy in a big hat with ostrich feathers and medals pulls up right outside.
He read his horoscope too, and it was in favor of it.
Yeah. So, yeah. And the waiter said, "Oh, we're also serving gun today." I grabbed a gun and said, "I'll take one of those." And then the whole thing just came together beautifully.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. Do you watch Saturday Night Live now? Do you check it out?
I have to say, I don't
see it as frequently, and then I see things online.
I do. I don't know how much of their monetization is from online, because millions of people will go and watch the YouTube, right? I guess.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, oh, that's the show? This isn't, because you have
when
an interesting perspective.
I see the music. I go like, what is that?
Now, to be fair.
That's music? It's like they're talking. I understand the kids like it, but I don't.
You never thought rock and roll would make it. I remember that very clearly.
I was wrong. I was wrong. And you know what? I grew to like it. Especially the Grateful Dead. I listened to nothing but Dead.
Wait, that was turning back into Bernie.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell if it was a Schumer or Bernie.
Then. Yeah,
it was me. I don't know. It was just me as an old Jew, and that's Schumer and Bernie, I guess, but more Bernie.
If you see SNL now, though, as you say that you check it out, can you wrap your head around the fact that it's the same show that was your and Tom's first real job in television?
Yep.
And you started the summer of 1975.
Right.
Can you understand that this is still the same show, or does it feel like, well, it's not. It's morphed so many times. It's something else.
Well, of course it has. And I remember when we first started the show, it would be like Belushi was on and he would smoke a joint. Mm-hmm. And everyone would go like, oh, my God, they're doing...
They're not doing that on Sonny and Cher. They're not doing that on, the Brady Bunch.
And then I remember when Dan Quayle was nominated to be vice president, and they won. And they asked him, who is your favorite act or musician at Woodstock? And he said, Jimi Hendrix. Mm-hmm. And I went like, oh, I see. There's no counterculture anymore.
The vice president.
Not only the vice president, but Dan
Quayle. Square vice president liked Jimi Hendrix, yeah.
Right. So I went, oh, I see. And so now, now it's like 48 years, right?
Yeah.
48 years. So, yeah, it's different. It's different. I just think their approach to political comedy is different. Downey and I used to write a lot of stuff we talked last time when I was on about doing the debate stuff, and we mm-hmm. tried to do stuff that our motto was to reward people for knowing stuff, but not punish them for not knowing stuff.
Right.
And so I was proud of the political stuff we write, and they hit it every once in a while, and like we missed it every once in a while as well.
Now that you're doing stand-up, and I love the name of your tour, and I have it right here, and I'm gonna read it off this piece of paper. Because that's how I work. I like to include people in the process so they can see behind the scenes what's happening. you're touring the country, and the name of the tour is The Only Former U.S. Senator Currently on Tour. I love that.
I wanted to say what it was.
Are you talking about current events a lot in your stand-up, or are you talking about your years in the Senate?
It's sort of biographical. So how I became, like Zelensky, right, is considered now probably the bravest person. And, of course, comedian, bravest profession.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Podcaster, maybe third.
That sounds right.
As profession.
No. Yeah.
But of comedians, Jewish comedians, the bravest.
Hmm.
And
come up with that? The Irish, of course,
and then,
are notoriously
Jewish
brave.
Comedians who go into politics, like Zelensky, the bravest.
Yeah.
Mm. So then I talk about how I became one of basically the second bravest person. So it's biographical, and then I get to me in the Senate, and I talk about those colleagues, and mm-hmm. and then I go into some stuff that's happening now.
Right. You know, Zelensky famously, Putin invades and the United States reaches out and says, we can airlift you out of there right away. And he says, I need guns, not a ride. Such a cool line.
Perfect.
Al, you in that same situation, I see you fleeing with a suitcase.
Running
with a suitcase that keeps flapping open and long underwear falls out and you've got to stop and shove it back in and then you keep running. And true or false?
I've thought about this myself. I mean, it was ballsy. I mean, he said, I don't want ammunition.
I don't want to ride.
Yeah. I don't want to ride. I want ammunition. And mm-hmm. that was pretty... I have to ask you, you're married to a guy from Russia.
He's from Armenia, which was part of the Soviet Union.
Oh.
Yeah, but he speaks Russian. And
Tak has children's toys that are from his youth.
Yeah,
in the Soviet Union, were you little children's toys? Do your kids play with the little Soviet toys?
They love those Soviet toys.
They're cute. Really? You pull the string and it says, get in line for bread.
But it says in Russian.
I pitched to Tak that we start a podcast about American versus Soviet toys called Perestroika.
And that's Perestroika. I would listen to that. That's great.
Well, those would be French toys.
Okay. God, this
Goodbye.
Is... Hey, wait.
Thank you very much.
Hey, wait a minute, Al. This is very rare, but the new low light has just gone off.
He's standing and bowing. Wow, this is the longest ovation anyone's gotten.
Incredible. Amazing. Wow, look. Just taking in all the love.
Perestroika. It would be French toys.
Every time you came on my show, in the late night show, years and years and years, you'd come on. And at the end, and the music was playing, you would do an insane dance up and down the aisles, running and running and burning all these calories. And the audience loved it. And then I think nine times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, it got cut for time.
Oh,
I mean, you worked so hard on that ending and it was fantastic. I think it got in once. I do.
I'm not sure it did. No, this was the comedy of energy. That's all it was, right?
It's called, what they used to call it in vaudeville, was a sweat act. Martin and Lewis, they would say, it's a sweat act.
It's just a lot
of jumping around. And then, of course, Jack Benny or, you know, there are other comedians.
Well, what was the theme? What's the end of the theme? You can sing the theme of your show.
Boo-doon-t, boom, doon't, doon't, doon't. Down.
Oh, here we go.
Boom, boom,
down, well, you have to imagine a big stairway.
Okay.
And I would just...
Oh, my God. You're like an old stripper.
And it lasted for fucking ever.
Oh, this song would go and go and go, and I think the band didn't want to cut you off, so they'd keep it going. Your resting heart rate when you were done... was something like 265. and then
because
the show would end with me saying, all right, you know, tomorrow, Lenny Kravitz, and then bang, out, completely out. And there was all this wasted energy. It was not seen by the American public.
Well, it was still worth it.
It entertained me and it entertained the 185 people that were in that room.
That's right. That's right. And that's all
you
care
3,000.
About. If I can make just...
We never could fill those back aisles.
As Pat Proft, I don't know if you know, he's a comedian from Minnesota who's a great writer, said, if I can make just one person laugh, then I know it's a Tuesday night at the Comedy Store.
Al Franken, I love talking to you. I cherish you as a friend.
Oh, I said, all right. What did I say?
Privileged.
You're privileged. Privileged. Yeah.
Do you feel that still?
Yeah, I wonder.
Now more I cherish this friendship.
That's nice.
You also have, of everyone I know, I think some of this, very strong legs. I'm just going to end on that.
Okay. Oh.
You have very strong buttocks and legs. I've seen you leg wrestle. I saw you leg wrestle in the Saturday Night Live offices, and I was impressed. No one could take you. Very strong, muscular legs.
That sounds like a challenge to me, Conan.
Oh, not for me. No, I have two Twizzlers for legs. The red Twizzlers. No, I would fall apart immediately. I'm just telling you.
I'd love to see it.
I just wanted to end on a fun fact about Al Franken is you won't find a man with stronger leg and buttock muscles.
They used to be stronger. I'm 71 now, so.
Mm-hmm. We're all going to look at your legs and your butt when you leave the room now.
Just like now, we did when you came in.
The cameras here, they do that?
Yeah. They add, these cameras, they're good, but as cameras do, they add about 15 pounds of muscle to the ass. Yeah. So
good for me because I lost some of that.
Yeah, some of it's atrophied.
Yeah.
Al, thank you very much for being here.
You bet.
We learned nothing, but...
Actually, you learned too much.
Learned something about World War I, and I think
that's... And a little something that I hope you don't include about the debt limit.
I've got it in my notes.
You know what we'll do? Speed up that part.
And then have me dance.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Thank you, Al.
You bet. Thank you.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Sona, I think you need to apologize.
What did I do? What this time?
I know. That's the thing is I was saying to Gorley, he said to me, should we do some kind of new segment? And I said, let's just do a segment called Sona Apologizes. And it's just because I know you've done something bad. I don't know what it is.
What do you mean know I've done? Wait, what?
I know that you've screwed something
up. Come clean, Sona. Tell us, first of all, what it is you did wrong, and then please apologize.
What are you doing?
I don't know.
What are you doing?
Well don't you think that's a safe assumption, that you've done something? You've probably done something. You probably made a restaurant reservation and said it was for Conan O'Brien, and then you and Tack went.
But I wouldn't apologize for that.
Well, that's a different thing. And so clearly you have. And by the way,
I've never done that.
The Cheesecake Factory does not require you call ahead.
I know. I've waited for over an hour for the Cheesecake Factory. But I don't know. I don't think I've done any. I mean, the thing is, though, because I don't do as much as I used to do.
Right.
So the chances of me screwing something up have fallen a lot. Because now whenever you ask me to do something, I really want to, like, you know.
You want to please me?
No, I want to keep getting
no.
I want to keep getting paid.
Yes, I see.
So I want to just keep doing.
Is there anything in the past you want to dig deep? Maybe find something from the past.
Yeah, like it's a therapy session.
It's like confession.
Wait, is it really?
Yeah.
About something I should apologize to you for?
Don't you think in general you just? I'm saying blanket Gorley. Yeah. In general, you should just apologize.
Do you want to apologize to me?
Well, listen, that could be another segment, and I don't think we'll have time for
it. You said a family emergency as if my dad's mustache went on strike. You said this a week ago.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, you said that. You said
that wasn't even a joke. That's a fragment. What's the
you
whole
said,
joke?
You said a family emergency for Sona as if her dad's mustache went on strike.
That's funny. Okay, you said it. I just wanted you to
and
say
then
it right.
How many times have you pet my head and you've like smelled your hand and you've gone, garlic.
Yeah.
And you've also said, you know, I need an industrial press to straighten my hair.
Your hair is out of control.
Yeah. But
do you know what? We had to get, you know, when we started doing the podcast, we didn't think about this. We just used regular headsets, you know, by Shure. They're the best headsets in the business, if you ask me. I'm glad they have their name on the side. But we forgot about Sona's hair. Your hair is so powerful. That we had to go to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and have them engineer out of steel.
They just used an old bear trap.
They used a bear trap.
Yeah.
It's basically, yes, exactly.
You said that my dad's built my brother out of wood and that you wanted him to be a real boy.
God, she has so many memories of my good bits. Yes. Did I say that your father, who looks a little like Geppetto, had built your older brother possibly out of wood and because he dreamed of having a real boy? Yes, I did make that offhanded quip once.
Once? You probably said it to a member of the press.
or like an Obama or someone important that like I want to think I'm cool and interesting.
I did at great length explain to President Barack Obama that my assistant Sona's brother was carved out of wood by his father.
Well, so Sona, do you want to apologize for any of this?
What the hell?
What?
I don't think, first of all, I think these are all class A bits, good material, solid landing. I mean, the fact that I'm able to be this creative around you, I think should be a source of wonder.
How many stores have we walked into where you're like, watch out for her, she steals and she's got sticky fingers?
No, I said you steal babies at
yes,
the marketplace.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Oh, but you've also said I just steal to right. like stores we just walk into.
Well, no, one specifically was an eyeglass store we went into.
Yes.
And I said, watch out for her. She's got sticky fingers.
And you know what?
And you know what? They followed you around after that.
That's what I was going to say. They didn't know you were joking, so they actually...
I wasn't joking.
Come
That's
on.
Not a joke.
No, but I don't...
You take stuff sometimes.
I don't do it anymore, and I wouldn't do it with you.
anymore.
I wouldn't do it with you.
Listen,
no, you need to apologize to me, I think.
I think, first of all, that's a dangerous precedent for me to admit to any crime. To apologize. I think that's a road we shouldn't go down. But I'm going to take your admission that you steal and steal often as an apology.
That doesn't mean.
Oh, okay, yeah. No. You just went, no. Is that a special no that you reserve for special times?
Me admitting something doesn't mean I'm apologizing for it. I'm just admitting that it happened. I think that you... If you're not going to apologize to me, I'm not going to apologize to you.
Okay.
Why should I do it if you're not going to do it?
Well, have you paid me recently?
All right.
Okay. I'm sorry. This is just how it works. I'm the guy who's writing the check.
Somebody needs to apologize to someone, so I'll do it.
Thank you, Gordon.
How many times have you tried to smack my hair bun?
Oh, it's
out
so
of
fun. Have you seen me do that?
No.
She gets her hair in a bun.
Oh, yes.
And I take
have,
a whack yeah. at it. And if I do it just right, the little elastic goes... And the hair goes whapang, and it fills the whole room you're in. It's crazy. It's so much fun.
No, I think that you...
Sona, I'm going to end this right now. You have nothing to apologize for. You're a wonderful person. You're a good friend. We've been through a lot together. My lawyer made me remember this.
And I think because you're telling me not to apologize now, I'm going to say I'm sorry.
Really? Wow. Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. And Gorley, I think you owe us both an apology.
You got it. Ready?
You come in here with your Mr. Rogers sweater.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
These are the people that you meet in the neighborhood,
That's Sesame Street.
Yeah, that's not the song.
What?
These are the people in your neighborhood.
You're singing
in
what
your
you
neighborhood.
Want.
Oh, that's not.
No, you're
you
talking
it's
about
a wonderful day in the neighborhood.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Oh.
A beautiful day for a neighbor.
Wait, which one is Cookie Monster on?
Sesame Street.
Oh.
Apologize.
I'm realizing now I really don't like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Oh, my God.
I like Sesame Street.
Oh,
wait, are you for real? You know, the neighborhood of make believe is in Mr. Rogers. I'm sorry, I'm rewatching all this stuff now.
I'm
and
watching
I'm real
Sesame
deep
Street
into it.
Every day.
Yeah.
Wait, what are we talking about now? I got lost.
Well, we just watch a lot of children's programming.
Right, because you have kids. I just sit there and watch it as just a fan.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I'm like, Mr. Rogers is on. I gotta, get my cereal out and watch. Those were good times. Look, I got off the rails there a little bit. We'll clean it up. Where did we end?
No, I want to talk about this.
We ended. We got Sona to apologize.
We got Sona to apologize,
yeah,
and Gorley has apologized.
And
I never did, actually. I said I would.
Do you want to? You're not going to apologize for anything.
What have I done except take care of you and your extended family? I am the sun, and you are a plant that grows because of my rays, my beneficent golden rays.
I'd like you to apologize for your weird metaphors.
My metaphor.
No, sometimes the sun will sunburn you.
Yeah.
And I think that the sun owes that person an apology.
I am the sun, and I apologize for that sunburn. That's funny. The sun is just... I provide all life on Earth.
Yeah.
I know, but what about that sunburn that guy got in Bermuda? He's very pale, and he didn't... Sun. Oh, all right.
What about Icarus?
That was his fault.
That was Icarus's fault. Sun, I apologize to Charles Millman of Canoga Falls, Ohio, for burning his shoulders It made his stay unpleasant and he had to buy aloe gel. Thanks, son. Now maybe you'd like to thank me for all the crops. We're good, son. Bye.
Fuck.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Ovsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.